Information, commentary, and podcast are always online at godandculture.com. Here again is Paul Edwards on Faith Talk 1500.
Tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, PBS will air what it is billing as the first of its kind six-hour documentary series exploring the 400-year history of religion in the public life of the United States. It's a six-hour, three-night series, God in America. And you can learn all about it at www.pbs.org/God in America. It's linked at our blog at godandculture.com. It is a production of Frontline, and Michael Sullivan has been a part of Frontline for more than 20 years. He currently serves as its executive producer, and he has quite a resume at WGBH in Boston. He supervised the widely praised and highly rated four-hour Frontline American Experience co-production of The Mormons, the six-hour series Country Boys, and several award-winning Frontline specials, including Ghosts of Rwanda and Faith and Doubt at Ground Zero. And Michael Sullivan, it's an honor to welcome you here to the Paul Edwards program. I hope you're well.
Thank you, Paul. I am. And I hope you are as well.
I am well. And I'm very excited to see that that PBS is venturing into, I mean, two things you can't talk about in polite company, right? Religion and politics.
And we're doing them both together.
Yes, you're doing them both together. And I'm wondering why you're so bravely venturing into this territory.
Well, we've been there before. I did a big series on Pope John Paul II, we did the Mormons, and we did Faith and Doubt at Ground Zero, and we've done films on George Bush's faith and its political implications. So we've danced in these waters before. And I think the trick is really not is being both respectful of faith and not constructing your film so you're challenging people's belief systems, but respecting them and trying to use the tools of journalism and in our case history in this current series to explore this world of religious faith and 'cause it's such a huge part of America.
And when we think about the role of religion, particularly in the American founding, you're obviously, you know, Michael, that there's two extremes. There are the right-wing extreme, the Christian theocrats, to use Damon Linker's phrase, who would say that, you know, the founding fathers and, you know, predating even the founding of the country, the John Winthrop generation, they came here for the express purpose of creating a new Eden, as you'll talk about tomorrow night on the program. But you've got that on one extreme, and then you've got another extreme in this country on the left that says, "Hey, you know the religious influence of this country was minimal at best. It was really the Enlightenment." And are you dealing with that?
We don't deal with it in the context of the current argument, because what we want to do is history and try to portray these stories in the context of their own times. And of course, they weren't having this argument.
Right.
We have it now, trying to prove something about what we think about the country now.
Right.
So we just sort of avoided that in general. I think it's a bit of an argument that I find a bit tiresome on both sides, because I think it makes deities out of the founding fathers, and of course they were men,
right,
who were trying to solve the problems of their day, just like political leaders are in every era. So I think it deifies them too much to try to keep proving something about the country from what they intended as people.
Yes, sure.
The Constitution there are going to be matters. The Declaration of Independence matters. The documents matter, but I'm not sure what they thought about what we might think about now is very relevant.
Are you approaching, Michael, this series with a particular ideological viewpoint?
No, I don't think so. I tried very hard to work with our people to make sure that didn't happen, that we weren't going to pick winners and losers, we weren't going to pick good guys and bad guys in this drama. But our ideology says this, that in America, religion matters. In American history, it has always mattered, and you can't understand the American story without also understanding its religious history. That's our mission. We are saying this is an important space to pay attention to.
Sure.
An important topic, but not trying to take any particular run through it. We're really trying to expose the dynamics of this history so people can have a bit of a common history to talk about together, you know?
Without giving away the episodes, when I finish watching this, and I plan to watch all 6 hours, when I finish, what kind of view of the role of religion in American life am I going to have? Is it going to be elevated? Is it going to be skeptical? What is it going to do for my understanding of the role that religion played?
Part what you bring to it and how much you already know. I think most people will be, perhaps not you, because you're obviously an informed observer of this scene, but I think most people are going to be surprised by some parts of it.
In what sense?
Well, I didn't know a lot of this history starting out. I worked with people who knew the history really well, but I didn't know it myself. I was surprised to realize how tightly woven together Thomas Jefferson and the Baptists were in terms of creating standards of religious liberty in Virginia and then in the American Constitution. And it sort of seized my imagination that, if you will, although he wasn't actually secular, I don't think, the most secular of Americans, a deist, would join forces with the most evangelical of Americans, the Baptists, mm-hmm. to forge our principles of religious liberty. I found that a spectacularly interesting story. As did I found the story of Abraham Lincoln in the crucible of the Civil War, in which he went through his own spiritual journey to reconfigure his ideas about God and what his ideas about God played in his making the decision to emancipate the slaves. I thought that was a fascinating story. And stories I didn't know, stories I hadn't been taught in the conventional history classes. And there are stories that map very clearly onto what's going on today. We do the story of Bishop John Hughes, the Catholic bishop in New York in the early 1840s, who battled the Protestant School Committee over what Bible would be read in the public schools, which the Catholic Bible or the Protestant Bible, and ended up with a piece of legislation that said there would be no religious instruction in the public schools of New York. And it maps so the sort of ostracizing and denigration of Catholic Irish Catholics in those days maps very much onto a lot of the controversies about the mosque at Ground Zero these days, and the intense feelings about Islam and Muslim Americans.
The Catholics never attacked America, as did the strict adherence to Islam that attacked America near Ground Zero. So is there really a fair comparison there?
Well, I think there is, honestly, because are you really saying that all Muslims are attacking America?
No, of course not. Of course not. And I have good Muslim friends who, quite frankly, I hope I continue to be my friend. I certainly don't want to suggest that all Muslims are terrorists. That's not my viewpoint. But when we talk about the sensibilities of what happened, and this is outside the scope of our conversation, but when we talk about the sensibilities of the victims of 9/11 and the fact that those who perpetrated these crimes against us were doing what they did, they say, whether right or wrong, they say in response to Islam.
You know, the people who are building the mosque, the Islamic Center in Lower Manhattan, are not the terrorists.
Well, that's outside, again, Michael.
What happens if we equate those things? There are real terrorists and there are real peaceful Muslims. They're not the same thing.
And I understand that, and I'm not equating them to be the same, but I'm saying that discrimination.
Why would you be opposed to them building their religious center? You know, there was a prayer room in the World Trade Center, an Islamic prayer room inside the World Trade Center.
The point, Michael, I'm making is going back to your point that the Catholic discrimination that they endured, the persecution that they endured, which I rightly oppose as a historical fact, I agree with you, it's a historical fact, cannot be equated with the kind of thing that's going on specifically with the controversy of the mosque at Ground Zero, I don't think, because it's, the Catholics had never done anything to incite the kind of reaction that they didn't deserve when they came here.
It was a Protestant reaction to years of Catholic domination of their faith in Europe. I mean, that's why they felt so strongly about Catholics. Everybody's got a reason.
Right.
But it matters how we behave, doesn't it?
I certainly agree.
The distinction which we make.
Right. But, again, I was just going back to your
point. But anyway, we could have this argument, which is probably not really the point. But the point is that we have been through these controversies before. We've come out of them. The trend lines are that we always fight about who should be included in the American faith mm-hmm. spectrum, and we always keep inch by inch expanding that spectrum and including more and more people.
Clearly, we ought to be including Muslims in the American faith experience. I don't deny that. The argument about whether there should be a mosque at Ground Zero is one that we could have another day. But to get
if someone were saying you can't build a Christian church in Lower Manhattan because Christians killed somebody one time?
Well, there is a Christian church in Lower Manhattan, an Orthodox church, I think, that was totally damaged and unusable as a result of 9/11, and the city of New York has put all kinds of obstacles in the way of the rebuilding of that church.
The problem is making an equivalent between Al-Qaeda and Islam and whether that's the right thing to do. That's really the question.
Well, I'm not making that. I'm not equivocating Al-Qaeda with Islam. Not at all. I would never do that. I'm not going to paint with a broad brush. I think I've made it clear, Michael, that I don't believe that all Muslims are terrorists.
But then why would you object to a Islamic center in Lower Manhattan?
On the grounds of sensibility, of being sensitive to the victims of 9/11, and it is not as if there are not hundreds of mosques already in New York City. This, to me, Michael, this is not about a freedom of expression, the expression of religion. Nobody is saying that Islam does not have the right, or Muslims do not have the right to practice the Islamic faith in New York City. It is taking place there. For me and for many others who object to the building of the mosque at Ground Zero, it is a matter of sensibility and not a matter of free expression of religion.
But it's both, isn't it?
I don't think in this case, because there are plenty of places in New York City within mere blocks or miles of where that mosque wants to be built.
So what's the magic circle? How close can you not be to Ground Zero?
Well, this is way beyond where I wanted to help you series, Michael.
Let's stop. Let's move on to something else.
I would love to have this conversation with you on another day. I mean, I'm not trying to avoid the issue because I'm certainly happy to have the conversation.
It's probably not benefit to either one of us to go down this road too far.
That's
not what we arranged to have this conversation.
Right. I'm excited about your series. I mean, I get a DVD in the mail 6 months ago, and I knew then that I wanted to talk to someone, and I'm glad I'm talking to you about your series, because I think the conversation you and I are having is not unlike the historical perspective that you're going to give us in this series about the real tension, the real disagreement, and hopefully we can air out these disagreements in a civil kind of way. And I guess the question would be, is that historically the case as we look back at what you're producing here in this series?
Well, I hope it is. I hope we've been fair-minded. We've tried to do our best. I mean, some of the criticism we're getting is we haven't covered everybody, but we have covered the major acts of the creation of religious liberty in America. We've covered a lot about the tensions between religion and politics, particularly in the 20th century. We've tried to follow the track of social reform movements and the religious basis of many social reform movements, from abolition and the civil rights movement to the moral majority, all of which are doing more or less the same thing on different political aims and different issues. But they're all using their religious faith as a basis for, and religious ideas and their spiritual lives as a basis for this political expression.
In that sense, has much changed. I mean, when you look back at the Puritan era, the pre-revolutionary era with Whitfield and Jonathan Edwards in that era, and the engagement of the political process, and then the engagement of religion with the political process in the revolutionary times has much changed. I mean, are we still having the same kind of conversation?
Religious liberty is hard, and we have a constitution that says two things: there shall be no established churches, mm-hmm. no national church, and that we will have free expression of religion. And there's an inherent tension between those two clauses in the First Amendment. And we've been sort of struggling forever to try to figure out what that proper balance is between free expression and no state-sponsored religion. And that's what most of the Supreme Court cases, church-state Supreme Court cases, are about. That's what a lot of the argument is actually about.
Here's where I make the distinction. The church shouldn't have any influence on politics, but certainly people of whatever faith should be able to use however their faith informs their politics in the public square.
Well, the distinction that I like to think about is exactly, it's very close to the one you're making, which is that of course religious faith is going to inform your politics, because I think even as the president has said, that making laws is codifying our morality, and for many people, that morality comes from the Judeo-Christian tradition or other religious traditions.
Mm-hmm.
So to separate religion and politics is virtually impossible. But when we come to argue those issues in the public square, because we are a religiously diverse country, it's not enough to just say, my faith says, as the final decider of the argument. You have to find broader ways of arguing it and broader democratic values way of arguing it than just saying my faith says, because your faith is not everybody's faith.
Right.
And that's the problem. And so religion will be bound up with politics. It's inevitable. But we have to find a way of talking about these issues in the public square that is broader than just the tenets of one's particular faith.
I think
that's the standard that I can make sense for me.
In terms of the producing of this series and the elements that go into it, what are we going to see? Are we going to see a mix of sort of dramatizations and then interviews with historians? How is the series portrayed on the screen?
Combining documentary material, even back in the earliest days, we have engravings and so forth of some of the characters. We've done a fair amount of dramatization, and the further back you go back in time, the more dramatization we've done, all based on the actual words of the characters we're portraying, or in the case of the trial of Anne Hutchinson and by John Winthrop and the Puritans in Massachusetts, the actual transcript of the trial, which exists. So we were able to recreate that trial in a verbatim kind of way. It's a fascinating episode. And then as we move into the 20th century, we've let go of the dramatizations because we have lots more archival material and we have lots more actual witnesses to events. And then that's combined with a series of interviews with scholars of America's religious history who are telling the story, giving us some interpretation, and trying to help expose the dynamics of this history for us, for our viewers.
Who would some of those scholars be, and what institutions might they be associated with?
Well, we have the sort of first among equals is Stephen Prothero from Boston University.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
We have people like Grant Wacker from Duke and
Well, that's
you.
All right. No, it's a question that
I always ask for the list I don't have in front of me.
Oh, sure. It's just a question I wouldn't expect you to have a detailed
answer
to.
Randall Balmer from Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
Is Mark
Knoll there?
Mark Knoll makes an appearance, I think, in episode 3 or 4 or both.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
We look for people who were fairly neutral, who were good storytellers. We weren't trying to cast it ideologically. I mean, we're looking for good historians. I think you'll find that the people, and we didn't ask them what their opinions were about the people they were talking about. We just asked them to tell us the story.
Sure. How long did the series take to put together?
Well, we developed it for a couple of years in terms of putting the first film treatments together and raising the money, and then we spent 2 years in production, just finished up this fall.
Is there a reason why it's coming out now, or is it just that's how it worked out?
It's when it was finished.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's normally when you put something out for public consumption is when it's done.
We didn't have any particular date in mind. It's just PBS likes to spread out its big series, and so baseball was first, and we were second.
Yeah. Well, is it that's my question. Is it fortuitous that it's coming out in the midst of the American and National League baseball finals here? Is that do you think that's going to rob you of some audience?
Well, I don't think so necessarily. There are only a couple of games left. It's not the ACLCS yet. I mean, if you're on in the fall, you're in baseball playoffs, and if you're on in the winter, you know, you're in football, you're in the Super
right.
Bowl and the playoffs. There are always playoffs. So,
well, I'm very excited to begin watching it tonight with hopefully many others in this audience. It's God in America. It's Frontline and the American Experience. Their production of God in America. It starts tonight on your local PBS affiliate at 9 o'clock.
I would love for we have a really social media site on our God in America website, which you gave earlier, called Faithbook, which we're asking people to tell us about their own spiritual journeys, and I'd love for your listeners to join in and add their spiritual journeys to the collection we're developing there. There's a series of questions you can answer about your own faith history, spiritual life, and your views on religion and politics and so forth.
Great. And you'll find that at www.pbs.org/God in America, and that link is at our blog at godandculture.com. Michael Sullivan is the executive producer for Frontline and the special project for God in America. And, Michael, it's been a fascinating conversation, and I hope that you and I will chat again.
I hope we do.